You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts. Spring and summer are so much fun in the garden that we often neglect growing veggies in winter. That's a massive wasted opportunity, so we're going to rectify that in this episode. Mariah Watkin is a home gardening enthusiast that's going to teach us about the basics of growing veggies in winter. She's representing this episode's sponsor, Charlie Carp, an awesome Aussie business that removes pest carp species from our estuaries and turns them into a wonderful fish emulsion fertilizer. Stick around to the end of the episode to learn about what makes growing veggies in winter different to growing them in the warmer months, how to prepare for spring once your winter crops have been harvested, and how the joy of gardening can help with your mental health struggles. Welcome to the show, Mariah.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you today?
Good. It's going to be fun. So can you start us off by talking about what are the reasons that eating fruit and veggies within their correct season is a good idea?
I think you will notice just going to the grocers in summertime or winter, you will notice how expensive some vegetables will be, and that is because they're not in season. For example, broccoli, that's a winter veg. So in summer when you're buying broccoli, you will notice it's like $12, $13, $14 a kilo. It's because they've had to put those veggies into special environments to keep providing us with, you know, winter veggies, but in summer. So that comes into the fact that obviously buying in season is going to be so much more cheaper for you at the end of your shop. And then obviously growing your own veggies within the season means you don't have to go buy so much broccoli or cauliflower, cabbage, etc. from the grocers, which also affects how much you're spending obviously at the grocery store.
Yeah, so a penny saved is a penny earned, as they say.
Exactly, exactly. So growing in season will help you save money in the long term and buying as well.
Yeah, so you brought up broccoli there. I mean, I've tried growing broccoli in summer and, yeah, it grows, but then the cabbage white butterflies come out and they decimate it. So, you know, then there's going to be extra effort in terms of putting up more nets, protecting them, possibly even, you know, insecticides and some of those nasties that we don't really want. So I guess that's why we grow particularly like broccoli and, you know, their relatives within winter.
That's correct, yeah. So obviously because of the heat as well in summer, it will just make your broccoli go to flower a lot more quicker. In some aspects that's good because the bees will have, you know, something to pollination and stuff like that. But, yeah, obviously broccoli is more suited for the cooler climates rather than harsh summer heats.
So what are some other classic winter veggies?
Well, I'm at the moment growing, obviously, broccoli, cauliflower, snow peas, peas. I'm not a fan of kale, but a lot of people grow kale in the winter. I've also got bok choy and pak choy growing, Brussels sprouts. You can grow lettuce as well, carrots, beetroot, all your root veggies like your turnips and stuff like that. But that's what comes to mind when I think of what you plant in a winter crop in the veggie patch.
Love it. And when we say winter crop, are we talking about, you know, the harvesting or are we talking about the planting? Because I guess with carrots, we probably want to plant them a little earlier, right?
Yeah, so you plant carrots more in the middle of autumn, so then you're harvesting within winter. A lot of winter veg, even though they're called winter veg, you plant them in autumn, so they've got that little bit of heat to get going. And then they do the slow growing within winter. So then you're harvesting later on in the month or season.
Love it. Okay, so in Australia, you know, I think a lot of us do love bok choy, but would you say that that would be like, I want to know, like, what are some of the most popular varieties that we grow in Australia?
Well, to be honest, I'm a person that every year I've got to try something new. So usually I plant all all my veggies from seed, but autumn was just a busy time. So I've gone from seedlings from the nursery. But you do see a lot of people, I'm hoping I pronounce this right, growing Romanesco broccoli. It's like green with little spikes. You see a lot of people trying unusual things. But one of my favorite, and I see a lot of people growing, is sugarloaf cabbage. It's much sweeter in the smaller variety, which means it obviously doesn't take up as much room in your bed. But, yeah, I'm the type of person that just loves trying new things. There's so many different varieties of veggies out there that you could probably do a whole podcast on what type of veggies mm-hmm. you could grow. And you'd probably need a second episode as well. There's just what you can buy at the nursery is so much different to what you can grow yourself from seed. But, yeah, Romanesco really comes to mind when I think of what is a really popular broccoli to grow. But obviously you've got like just your bunching broccoli as well, which is you pick and it grows again. It's not just a whole head of broccoli. But yeah, there's so many varieties that, yeah, I really doesn't come to mind of certain types. But yeah, we could be here all day talking about varieties of cauliflower or cabbage or broccoli, etc. So yeah.
Totally. And then I guess this is down to the magic of breeding, isn't it? So, you know, we've got modern day breeders who are doing their thing, probably at scales that we've never seen throughout history. But even our ancestors used to do it too. Like, for example, with your heirloom vegetables, you know, anyone can just go on the internet, just do a quick Google search of heirloom seeds and find some pretty incredible tried and tested plant varieties.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, they date them back to, you know, 30s and stuff. People are going to summer veg. I know this is about winter veg, but you see tomatoes and stuff, you'll see that this person brought a seed from Italy in 1920, 1930, and we're still growing them today. It's unbelievable what we can grow ourselves in our backyards to things that we can't buy in the store. So I think that's also where it's also good growing your own vegetables. You can grow different varieties and different things that encourage you to grow and eat your own vegetables because it's interesting and you've grown something you can't buy yourself.
Totally. I mean, how cool does it feel knowing that you put something on your plate that, you know, maybe you've never seen before or your partner's never seen before, and, you know, every week you can just sort of try new things if you've got a big enough veggie patch.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's also about the variety, but homegrown is so much better. The taste is nothing like a shop. I think when you grow your own veggies, especially when you're growing your own broccoli and cauliflower, I'm not the biggest fan of cauliflower, but I grow it myself and I love it. It's just so much sweeter and it tastes more natural. It tastes like what a cauliflower should taste like, not what it looks like sitting in the shop. So, but that's my own opinion. But yeah.
It's funny how when you talk to a lot of veggie gardeners, they sort of start saying the same thing. So there must be something to that, don't you reckon?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I think so too.
If all the gardeners are saying it, then, yeah, there must be some truth about it, maybe.
I reckon, yeah, definitely veggies grown at home taste better. It's probably something in the fact that we really care about the soil. You know, we're giving them lots of nutrients and lots of carbon so that all of those microorganisms can play around under the soil and do their thing. And also, I think we cannot underestimate passion as well. Like when you've actually grown something yourself, there's just an element of gratitude that's not there when you can sort of just pick it up from the shop. I mean, when you actually see the hard work and the time it takes to grow them, and it may not even be necessarily hard work, but when you're actually a part of that process, something happens, doesn't it? Something magical.
Yeah, I think it's because you've put so much love and attention into growing the veggies, you know, and you've put your love and your heart and your money into improving the soil and, you know, going out with it being either seeds you've grown yourself, which I think you put more love into because you've grown it from such a tiny seed and you've seen it go to something that's been on your plate. So, yeah, it's just the love and dedication that makes it, I think, 100 times more better.
Couldn't agree more. So, look, this next question I've got here, we kind of touched on it a little bit already, but it's so simple. But I think it's a sort of question that you might overlook because it's so simple and, you know, you might be sitting there thinking, this is too simple of a question to ask. So hopefully we can answer this for some people listening. Why do we grow – like we traditionally think of spring and summer as the growing seasons, but, you know, there's so much more energy out there, there's sunlight and stuff. But why is it that winter is a better growing season for certain vegetables, do you reckon?
So I have read before in a few articles, so that frost and the cooler months enhance the winter veg taste. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think it's true. Plant stress does increase their taste. Yeah, so 100% I believe that.
Yeah, so I don't know if it brings the sugar out to make them tastier and sweeter, but you are right. Us gardeners, we always think of spring and summer. I saw something the other day on Instagram and someone wrote, is it too early for me to be planning what I'm going to be planting in spring and summer?
Right.
And to be honest, it's, I would say no, because I do love spring and summer. But yeah, I would say because certain things can tolerate different, you know, climates. You've got your frost, you've got your cooler nights and cooler mornings, beautiful winter days. That is why the winter veg is more suited to the cooler months. As we said earlier, if I was to go plant a broccoli at the beginning of summer, there'd be no way I would get a broccoli to harvest. It would either grow and flower or it would just wither from the heat. We do get quite hot days where we live. So that is why there are certain veggies for different seasons and why people tell you to plant those veggies in that season, because it's going to be not worth your time if you go and try and grow a cauliflower or a broccoli, you know, mid-spring or mid-summer, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, we've missed this massive gap. Like, why would we leave our veggie patches bare through winter when we can be growing other things? It's crazy.
Things do take a lot longer to grow in your winter. That's why you start, you know, mid-autumn and you're harvesting towards the end of winter. It is, I guess it's the slow period for any home gardener. It's the time for you to do other jobs in the garden while you know that the cauliflower, broccoli, you know, Brussels sprouts are all growing, whereas summer, it feels like you just run off your feet all the time. There's something to always harvest every single day in summer, and you've got to worry about the water and everything like that. So I think winter is a time for us to all slow down, have a veggie patch growing, and it's just kind of progressing slowly and you're harvesting towards, you know, the middle of winter to the end of winter and early spring.
Mm-hmm. So I think in nature, you know, Charles Darwin said nature is all bloody in tooth and claw. So it's this massive like competition. So some plants are going to really bust out in spring and summer, and then they're going to die off, or maybe they're perennial and they sort of live through that stage. But some of these winter veggies, these are really annual plants that back in the day before we bred them for eating, they had that little niche in winter where other things weren't really growing. So there was this gap in the market and then winter veggies colonized that gap.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's why we do plant them when we plant them now, because of the prior history of how they grew in the wild, etc.
Totally. All right. So do you have any tips for preparing soil for winter veggies? Like, is it the same thing as spring veggies? I guess it is, right?
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, everything needs nearly the same type of preparation for the next season. I plant a green manure crop, which fixes the soil. So it adds nitrogen, brings minerals from the bottom of the soil to the top for the plant. In a green manure, it's got a variety of different seeds. So your winter one that you sow is different to what your summer one would be when you're prepping for winter. I also add in fertilizer. So I go for Charlie Carp pellets. When I'm adding my manure, I sprinkle some Charlie Carp pellets on top. I mix that through the soil and then I give it at least a week to kind of settle down, break down and everything like that. But I guess, yeah, the way you prepare your soil for spring and summer, autumn and winter are all the same, but it's whatever works for you. If you've got a home composting system, add compost. But there is nothing wrong with going to, you know, your local nursery and buying compost as well. Checking the pH level of your soils as well, making sure that they're at the right number. And, yeah, just add what you think your soil needs. And depends on what was planted in the bed beforehand. So if you've had things that have you know, have say, like taken up all the nutrients. So I've had like tomatoes and stuff, and they were a bit off towards the end of the season. So I've made sure I've added a lot of manure. And obviously, as I said before, the fertilizer, the Charlie Carb, which is a slow release. So that will help your veggies throughout the season, as long with, you know, your liquid fertilizers that you add as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to Charlie Carb again. I just wanted to touch on those mm-hmm. because that's really interesting, those pellets. So you're saying it's a slow-release fertilizer. It's also got the carbon, and it's also going to have like a whole heap of microbiome. So it's also kind of like a prebiotic, a probiotic, and a multivitamin, right?
Yeah, if that's how you want to think of it for your veggie patch. It's like how we take a multivitamin in the morning. I guess, yeah, it's similar to what the plants need to thrive and grow and take all those nutrients in and just give them a little bit of a boost to get you through the season.
Yeah, and it's organic base, and you can also upgrade that organic base with a bit of nitrogen supercharging too, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So nitrogen is really good for your plants. So it does have it in it, the pellets, and also the liquid fertilizer, which is what I really love about it. You will notice once you add Charlie Carb, your plants will just thrive. They'll be so much greener, and they'll go through from something so tiny to a huge broccoli or cauliflower cabbage in no time because of the minerals and everything that is in the pellets.
Love it. So how do we tell when our plants are maybe a little bit hungry for nutrients? Like, okay, so we've built the bed now. We put the plants in. We have that organic base in the soil, those amendments and those slow-release fertilizers in the soil. Now we're looking at our plants and we're wondering, okay, so we're looking at that tomato plant of yours and it's a bit lackluster. Like, what were the symptoms that you noticed that you thought, okay, so this needs a feed?
So with the liquid fertilizer, I try and do it every 2 weeks just to give them a light little boost. You will notice sometimes the leaves may go yellow, which means they're lacking something. You may notice that within, you've planted it, it's been a month and you've got no new leaves, nothing's going. It means that it's lacking something. So my first thing I would do is add some fertilizer and give it another week to see. But obviously maybe you are lacking something in the soil. Maybe it needs more compost. Maybe it needs, you know, some mulch or something like that. But the plant will show signs of when it's not growing well. Mainly what I notice is yellowing of the leaves is the main thing that you will notice, and slow growth. Your plants should at least, you know, have luscious leaves and big leaves by now. And if they're the size of a seedling still, it needs something. It needs a little bit of work to the soil, or maybe just simply adding some fertilizer.
Love it. So you mentioned the liquid fertilizer there. That's a really interesting point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the slow-release fertilizer is really great at releasing nutrients slowly over the growing season. But then if they're showing signs of nutrient deficiency, well, there's no point in trying to put a slow fertilizer down, because by the time that plant needs the nutrients, it's already too late. So if we give it a nice foliar application, a bit of a spray on the leaves of a liquid fertilizer like Charlie Carb, then the plant can uptake those nutrients immediately and put it straight into the fruit that it's growing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've had a few warm days at the moment, so the plants are looking a little bit sad. And I add it just then as well, just a light little mist in the morning with the fertilizer so the leaves can take in the nutrients. It just helps them a little bit with shock. I think end of autumn, early winter is a very weird stage for some gardeners in Australia, because we've gone through cold periods and all of a sudden we've got beautiful 22, 23 degree days. So I also use the fertilizer. If I am planting a new plant, I will soak the plant in some fertilizer. I just think it helps with transplant shock. And like if you're doing cuttings and stuff like that, just helps to give a little bit of nutrients to the plant before you just go shove it in the ground and hope for the best.
100%. Yeah. So horticulture, it's an art, but it's also a science.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're always thinking about what to do next and how are you going to help this plant and how to bring it back to a bit of life when, you know, those plants you buy at the nursery and then you forget about them. A little bit of soaked in fertilizer is brilliant. And yeah, it's what I use. Everyone's different, I guess, but it's what I turn to when I'm planting.
I just love the smell of it, honestly. Like, there's I like the smell of manure too. There's not many fertilizers I don't like the smell of, except for blood and bone. But Charlie Carper, I reckon, smells the best.
It has a little bit of a fishy smell, but I think once you get used to it, you wouldn't even know it's there. But yeah, I agree with you. There are a lot more stinkier fertilizers out there. Like, you know, you can always tell when someone's just put a fresh batch of like chicken manure in the garden and stuff. But that is one positive of Charlie Carp is the smell.
I know. I love it. It smells like sunshine. It just smells like happy gardening. I don't know how to describe it. It's an association thing. It's just totally every time I smell it, I'm always in my happy place. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think us gardeners, we're a bit weird in that aspect. You know, we love the smell of fresh compost or manure or like, oh, my goodness, this soil smells delicious. And you think, is there something wrong with me? But it's just what us gardeners are like. We know what I think it's a bit weird because I think we know what things should smell like for the garden.
That's right. And then if you smell something a bit sour, like you're smelling that soil, it's a bit sour. No, that's not right. There's something off.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. Yeah.
Mm. So what are some other common challenges about growing in winter?
So my biggest challenge is cabbage moth, especially in the early start. So as I said before, you plant your winter veg in autumn and then harvest in winter. And it's the warmer days that bring out the cabbage moth, which I find. So I net all my brassicas. Actually, I net pretty much everything that they like to eat, my bok choy, pak choy, cauliflower, broccoli, my silver beet and things like that. Anything that's got nice, delicious green leaves, I net. It's so much easier to net than to try and fix the issue afterwards. Obviously from your cabbage moth you get the caterpillars. So what I do is obviously I brought seedlings from Bunnings and nothing from the nurseries or anything like that are covered. So I always make sure I check the back of the leaves. That's where the cabbage moth are going to lay their eggs, are on the back of the leaves. So I make sure I just check that before I obviously put my plants in the netting, because once they're in there you'll notice little butterflies flying around. The netting won't stop the eggs, that's for sure. And I guess some places get really bad frosts as well. We live in town, so we're kind of lucky. We do get the occasional light frost, but other places you do see and they've got heavy frosts. And even though the veggies love the cooler weather, sometimes if you've got constant really heavy frosts, it can damage the plants. And also I think rainfall as well. Even though the veggie patch doesn't need as much water as, you know, say summer and spring, some people do rely on rainfall to just give the garden a little bit of a water. And I find that sometimes hard as well for people. And I guess it's where you've also planted your veggie patch as well. If you planted it somewhere that's got full sun in summer, but then come winter, there's a tree shading your veggie patch and stuff. So I think less sunlight and the change in the sunlight hours is really hard for some people, especially if you've just got like a little courtyard or something like that. It's very hard for some people to grow in shade because obviously plants need the sunlight. That would be what I would say common challenges would come to mind for growing in winter.
Great. I love those. The one that really perked my ears up was the sunlight change one, because I've seen that so many times where you plan a garden out in one season and you think, all right, well, here's where the sun is. You know, you do your 24-hour sun observation, or 12-hour sun, whatever much sun you have, but you watch where the sun goes throughout the whole day. And then, as the equator and the sun you know, change their alignment, the sun will actually shift on where it is. And it's quite disappointing, isn't it, when that happens and you maybe have to cut out a tree or just live with it.
Exactly. And I think that's where people that do have a smaller yard and, you know, don't have a lot of sunshine without through winter and stuff like that, that's where, you know, those garden beds that you can wheel around or move, like little raised garden beds. I've got a few of them. Not that we struggle with sunshine, but, you know, you might want to plant something here in one season and think, oh, no, I want to change the veggie patch around. And that's where it comes into real handy for people like that. I obviously have veggie patches that I can't move around, but I've placed them in areas that either get like a little bit of morning shade and then the rest is sun, or a little bit of afternoon shade, which comes in handy in the summer when the afternoons are so much warmer than the morning sun.
I love that. So I think when we're talking about sunlight or lack thereof in winter, another thing I got to bring up is waterlogging too. Like you mentioned rain. Well, waterlogging seems to be another one, I think. When we can't get rid of the moisture that's there and then we get another dump of rain, that can cause issues, can't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I don't know if you're going to ask this question later, but I guess we all think of diseases in summer veggies, like, you know, blossom rot, powdery mildew, but you can also get that in winter as well. So what I try and do is I don't use sprinklers or anything in the veggie patch. I try and use a dripper system. So it's just watering the bottoms of the broccoli and stuff. If you do need to water the leaves, I suggest doing it early in the morning so they've got all day for the leaves to dry, because even though we refer to powdery mildew as a summer thing because of the heat and the humidity, it can also be like, it can also affect your winter veg as well, especially if, you know, it's very damp, you've had rain, but you've also watered the garden and stuff like that. So just bear in mind to make sure you keep an eye on your veggies. If you're like any other gardener, you will be out in your veggie patch morning, noon and night to to see if anything's to see if anything's changed. But I can guarantee you nothing's changed in the last 2 hours that you haven't been out there. But, yeah, just keep an eye on your bordering schedule, rain and things like that, just to make sure that, you know, you don't get any diseases in your garden which you'll just wipe out your crop and you'll have nothing to harvest.
No, that there's nothing worse than pests and diseases taking away your crop. It's heartbreaking because you put so much love into it and then it's just gone and nothing can ever bring it back again.
Yeah, I think pests are a little bit more easier maybe to maintain because you can put nets on and you obviously can buy things that are organic or however you like to garden to spray on your veggies or, you know, you can get those little fake cabbage moths that apparently keep the cabbage moth away from your area, whereas I think diseases, in a blink of an eye, they can just take over your garden.
Right. And without insecticides, there's very without pesticides, there's very little you can do.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Which is hard because I think once I had a disease on my tomatoes, and by the time I had really noticed it, it was too late. It was just better off to pull the tomatoes out and continue on than to, you know, go spend $30, $40, $50 on things to try and bring it back. But yeah.
Now, while we're on the topic of, I know we're talking about diseases, but I just want to go back to pests again briefly. I'm a big fan of like companion planting, especially little flowers like alyssum or chrysanthemum and stuff like that, just stuff that can feed the adult life form of predatory insects that will then lay their larvae next to or near our pests, and then they will devour them. So it's not a good way to get rid of all of the pests. It's just a good way to control it naturally, especially when you've got a bit of time to sort of build that ecosystem in your garden.
Yeah, totally. I would love to say I companion plant a lot, but it's something I think you need to really get your head around before you try and do it. I obviously grow some like calendulas. They say to put herbs and stuff out to deter the bugs and things like that. But obviously with netting, there's no point putting the, you know, the flowers or companion plants inside the netting. So I think that's kind of why I haven't really gone down that path, because I do just net my whole veggie patch, which I just find it easier for myself. You know, if you go away or something, or you're not well, you know that the garden is fine outside because it's covered in that net. But don't think the net can keep them all out, though. That's my number one tip. They're sneaky, and they will find any hole to get in. But I think if your veggies are coming out perfect and haven't been eaten by a caterpillar or anything like that, you're doing well. But also, you know, it's homegrown if it's not 100%.
Absolutely. Look, I think a lot of people get a bit overwhelmed by companion planting. They're like, oh, so I've got to plant basil with tomato, and I've got to plant this with that, and I've got to plant. Look, those guides are great in terms of like what you should plant with what. But at the end of the day, just chuck some alyssum in and some chrysanthemum, and those are little flowers for little mouthparts that have an abundance of pollen and nectar for just tiny insects. So that's a good start. You don't have to get too scientific with the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that's what scares people, because you do see, you like, if you Google companion plants or something, it will give you a list of companion plants, and then I think it's just mind-boggling and a bit confusing. But as you said, if you just choose two or three plants that you know you can grow, you can buy the seedlings from the nursery, then go for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. $4 wasted if the if the moths don't like it.
Yeah, and it's an experiment too, so it all builds your gardening experience. All the best gardeners have failed them more than anybody else. That's what makes them the best gardeners.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if, you know, you live and you learn. You learn from your mistakes. Mm. I had a terrible, terrible, terrible summer season. So now I'm planning how to make that better, what to do. I think you just learn from your mistakes, and you learn from other people's mistakes. When you see them, you know, people posting on Instagram, and you think, oh, that's what I was going to do. Well, I'm not going to do that anymore because that didn't work for this person. And I think that's the beauty of social media, is there's so many people that are doing the exact same thing as you. But, yeah, we're all still learning. You're learning every day. So
that's it. So what about spacing your winter veggies? Look, obviously every plant has their own needs, but can you give us just a basic insight into what's going on in terms of spacing our veggies?
I will be completely honest with you right now. I would love to say read the back of the label and plant as they say, but I would be telling you to do something I don't do. I think what I've done this season is, so last winter was really my first time giving winter veg a good crack, and growing all of my own brassicas, etc. So I've kind of taken what I've learnt from last winter and put it into practice for this winter. Plant as you think you want to plant them. That's what I'm going to say, because I think sometimes, I know if I was to plant what the label said, I'd probably have about three plants in each garden bed, which isn't really a lot. So I think about how big things are going to grow. As I said before, think of how you planted last season. Last season you may have thought, oh, I've jammed too much into my raised garden bed. Then start spacing out. I think I have planted before with what the label has said, and there's just so much room and some like useless space that hasn't been used. But I will say, obviously, if you grow broccolini and stuff like that, they grow quite tall. So make sure if you're using netting or anything, I use little arches just made out of poly pipe to arch the net over. Make sure your arches are high enough. I guess that can also come into effect for tomatoes and stuff because they grow quite tall as well. Mm. I know last year my netting wasn't high enough for broccolini, so the broccolini kind of just molded its way through the netting.
Nothing wrong with that, by the way.
No, just it's your garden. You do what you want. I would say root veggies. So you've obviously already planted your root veggies and the beetroot, carrots, parsnips, turnips are probably already growing. So you should be past this stage as well, but is thinning out your veggies. So you're not getting, yes, you know, all wonky type of carrots. Not that there's anything wrong with wonky carrots. They all taste the same at the end of the day. But just making sure that you're thinning them out, especially beetroot, if you want to get big, nice beetroot, thin them out because they don't like competing with each other.
And that's the solution to your gap problem, right? You overplant and then you thin every second one so that there's not that wasted space. And I do that with greens. I do that with everything.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes maybe not with more of your root veggies, but lettuce and stuff, you can replant. If you've planted too much and you've pulled some out, replant it. Don't throw it away. But, yeah, I would say, yeah, plant the way you think you can plant. If you're a new gardener, go for it. Please follow instructions so it's not overwhelming for you, because I know you might think, oh, I'll just do this, and then it doesn't work out. And I think that's what, you know, deters people from gardening sometimes. Give it a go and then you'll figure out what's best for you. Because, yeah, I definitely don't read the labels and I definitely don't go with space the cauliflower out 30 centimetres.
Jeez, so much space, isn't it, for a little tiny seedling? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, but then you obviously it starts growing and you think to yourself, yeah, that's why they say plant it. Plant it 30, 40, 50 centimetres apart. But, yeah, just plant the way you think it should be planted. At the end of the day, it's your garden. No one really can tell you what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You make your garden the way you want to make it, and we all live and learn from our mistakes. If, you know, you lose one broccoli out of it all, but you've learnt something for next season, that's a win for you, I think.
Totally. Look, one of the things I've learned with winter veg is I used to love eating chickweed and I would eat it so much. So I used it as a ground cover in my winter veggies. But, you know, I guess one of the things I always knew was going to happen, and it did happen, is that it just completely overcrowded everything. And now I spend a lot of time digging it up, and we've sort of lost our palate for it now. So we're starting to we've decided this year we're going to get rid of the chickweed. But the seeds and the soil, yeah, there's a lot of seeds in the soil, so it's going to be quite the process to get rid of it now.
Yeah, they'll keep popping up.
It's a good ground cover, but it is quite vigorous in winter.
Yeah, yeah. I guess things like that love the winter, so it's a little bit, goes a bit crazy, I guess.
Yeah. But it's it's got those little flowers for our little pollinators. There's a lot of benefits to it, and it does taste nice. But, yeah, one of the things, you might get sick of it eventually, as we did. We've got too much chickweed at this point. But dandelions are still going strong. We love a good dandelion. That's another crop I planted, just with totally diverse seeds from all over the place. And we have all these, and they will kind of look different. And some, I don't know if they taste different. I don't think they taste that different. But if I really observed, I might be able to taste. But, yeah, they've got this beautiful bitter flavor, and I love the dandelions. Not sick of them yet.
Yeah, grow what you're not sick of, because, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I neglected to ask you actually something earlier.
That's
so
okay.
What went wrong in summer?
I didn't this is going to bite me because of what I just said before. Don't follow spacing. I planted my tomatoes too close, which when I planted them a week later, I was like, they're too close, but I didn't have anywhere to transplant them. And there were new varieties that I've never grown. So mentally I wasn't really sure how big these tomatoes were going to grow or anything like that. I got what they call – I got blossom rot. I also got like a powdery mildew on the tomatoes, but – because I had never had it on tomatoes before, by the time I think I posted something on Instagram and someone was like, you've got, I can't really remember the correct name. And I was like, oh gosh. And then by the time you look into how to fix it and stuff, you know, you've got to cut X amount of away from the tomatoes, spray this stuff on. I was just like, too hard, especially when you're coming to the end of the season. But tomatoes would have to be one of my favorite things. So it really hurt me inside. So the next season, only two plants per raised veggie patch. So there's plenty of airflow for, because we had such a wet, humid summer. I think everyone in the gardens really had a difficult summer from what I can see and what people have said. So I think that's how you learn. As I said before, you know, I've learned how to plant my winter veg close together for this season because it worked out for me last season. And I think now, I think when I'm planning my spring summer garden, I won't be thinking about planting too many tomatoes in the raised garden bed.
Just enough though, hey?
Yes, just enough to get us through, but yeah, not too many that I end up with a disaster garden again. Oh,
we've all been there. Well, you're certainly not the first gardener who got very excited and wanted to plant more than what the space allowed. It's a temptation every time, and I do it all the time.
But yeah, I think we just try and jam-pack things because we're I think because spring and summer is so exciting in the garden, we don't want to miss out. I think that's I think that's the issue.
Yeah. We talked about tall plants. Just on the topic of tall plants, something to keep in mind in sunshine is that tall plants go to the back and short plants go to the front so that everyone can receive enough sunlight.
Yes, yes, that's a good thing to keep in mind. You know, you don't want to plant corn, for example, in front of something that's, you know, your root veggies or something like that, that are going to be covered in shade all day.
Yeah, totally. Seems simple, but sometimes you just need to say it and you need to hear it to let it sink in.
Yeah, and I think before you plant, watch the sun type of thing to see where it is. I know when I've put arches in, before setting the arches, I've just set the arches where I've wanted it, and you watch throughout the day. Sometimes it's hard, but I work from home, so it's easy for me to look out the window and see what the sun's like at midday or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So just kind of watching where the sun is and before you, you know, set in stone that this is where you want to plant.
That's true. If you spend more time planning, it means that you spend less time correcting your mistakes.
Yes, yeah.
So, Mariah, do you have any tips for people listening who want to do their winter veg sustainably? Like, that's something that they really focus on.
I would love to say that I'm, you know, all about sustainability, but it's something new to me that I'm kind of getting my head around. But I guess what you said before, instead of using pesticides and stuff like that, companion planting is going to be the sustainability side of that for you. I would love to say that I don't use things on my garden, but it's so new to me, that area, you know, people that don't use pesticides or anything in their yard. I think I've come from, you know, my parents would use stuff on the garden because it was easy for them because they were so busy. And I'm kind of, it's just an area for me to be learning in, to kind of step away from that. I do try my very best, but sometimes it is so much easier just to sprinkle something on the plants. I try, if I do go for something, I try and do like a low toxic thing that's not going to affect the plants. But, yeah, I guess, you know, if you're using your own homemade compost and stuff, you know what's in it. You're not adding things you're unsure of to the soil. A lot of people use, like, no-dig gardens, which are helping the soil below. You're not affecting the worms and things. You're just building on top of the soil and don't have to dig. Whereas I use raised garden beds because we have terrible clay soil in our backyard, so it's just not viable for us to be able to plant in the ground for veggies, especially root veggies. Our backyard floods as well. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a whole learning curve. And I think that's one thing that has scared me, being not having my head around that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I think you're sometimes frowned upon if you do use things in your backyard, and it's a learning curve for everybody. Some people can pick it up and go with it, and some people, you know, still got to get your head around how to do that in your own backyard.
And a lot of people are lying on Instagram too. They're saying yes. They're using organic methods and they're not.
Yeah, that, and I think that's where it comes for new gardeners. Like when I started gardening, really was about 3 years ago now, and I think that's what scared the absolute hell out of me was people on Instagram. And you think, oh, my God, I've got to do that. I've got to do mm-hmm. this. I've got to do that. No, you don't have to do that. You garden the way you want to garden. If you want to put all those sustainability practices in, go for it. And, mm-hmm. you know, try your very best and give it a go. But some people, it's a little bit of a learning process for them, and that's where I am at the moment. But, yeah, I try to be as sustainable in the garden as possible, but sometimes it just isn't everyone's cup of tea.
And also it's not a black and white thing. I think a lot of people think either you're sustainable or you're not. No, it's not really like that, because nobody is totally sustainable in this world. Like, you can ride your bike to work. That's great. Someone had to make that bike, though. And even just the very fact of your breathing is putting out carbon on some level. So I think it is just really about, just as you say, working at your own level that you can work at. Not being perfect is not a reason to not start, I don't think, or not to continue, because it's only through doing it that you actually pick up the skills. And as you say, like, first of all, you learn how to grow tomatoes and you learn how to till the soil and stuff, and then you learn this, that, and the other, and then you learn about companion planting, and then you learn, you know, sustainability. But one thing I would say about the sustainability side is you've got to be careful, firstly, because there's a lot of greenwashing out there. People who say things are sustainable aren't always sustainable. And what do we mean by sustainability anyway? It just means that we can keep doing it. So in terms of what you're doing with your veggie patch, like, in a sense, that actually is a sustainable action right there, is feeding yourself, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I'd agree with that, yeah.
And also you're using Charlie Carp. So Charlie Carp are removing pest species of carp from our Australian estuaries, which is a massive problem for our ecosystem. So there again, that's another sustainable practice, is choosing the products that you use.
Yeah, and I think Charlie Carp, what really caught me when I first started using Charlie Carp was, you know, my family are a big fishing family, and my partner and stuff as well. So we live on we have the Murrumbidgee River where we are, and I think the river is just terrible, fully, you know, with all the carp and stuff in the river. And companies that are like Charlie Carp that use a pest to create such a beautiful product that we can put back on our gardens and it feeds the soil and stuff is what we need. Because the carp are damaging our waterways so much, and it's really great to see a company using something like a pest to create a fertilizer made of fish, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. In episode 122, I actually spoke with Charlie Carp's managing director, Ron Kaponica, about this, and he sort of paints a picture of the devastation that these carp have done to our estuaries. And, you know, I think that the people who were starting this company really had a sit around and they thought, okay, so this problem's here. You know, no one's doing anything about it, or very few people are doing very little about it. What can we do so that we can set up something on an ongoing basis that we can start to remove these pest species? Because it's not just, you can't just come in once and have a go and then it's done. It's like, as long as there's a breeding pair of carp out there, it's just never going to stop. And how do you get rid of it other than just incentivizing someone to come in and remove things periodically? That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what Charlie Carp are doing is amazing. You know, obviously they're not taking all the carp away out of the rivers in a click of a finger, but they're doing something that's going to help the environment in the long run. So future generations can still enjoy the river, and it's not infested with carp.
That's right. Yeah, just providing those little gaps for the native species to build up again.
Yeah, exactly.
So, look, we mentioned fish emulsion fertilizer. Look, we've talked about it a little bit, but for anyone who's sleeping on this, why would you say that, you know, fish emulsion fertilizer as an organic fertilizer, and you can also get the supercharged one with nitrogen in it, like, why should people use Charlie Carp?
For starters, you can use it on anything from your indoor plants to your lawn. I love giving the lawn a good feed after winter. You pretty much use Charlie Carp on anything. Anything I can use Charlie Carp on, I use. It's great for when you're starting your seedlings. So once your seedlings get the first true leaves, just giving them a little bit of an extra boost before planting them into the soil. And it's packed full of nutrients, no harmful chemicals or anything like that. And as I think when people think of, oh, my goodness, it's a fish fertilizer that has to stink. But as you said earlier on, the smell isn't that bad. I thought when I first thought about it, I thought, you know, fish market type of smell. That's what I thought it was going to be. But the smell is quite subtle. You wouldn't even know it's fish, I don't think.
It just smells like gardening.
Yeah, just a gardener's dream, really. Yeah. but, yeah, the reason I use Charlie Carp liquid fertilizer is because once I started using it, I noticed the difference in my garden and I really haven't turned back at all. And Charlie Carp are local to where I am as well. So it's great to, you know, support local. But yeah, just I wouldn't turn back on the Charlie Carp fertilizer. The added benefits that it's giving to the soil. And I also spray it on the leaves as well. So they say that the leaves would take in the nutrients as well as obviously watering around the base of the plant. But as I said earlier, if you're going to water the leaves, make sure you're doing it, you know, in the morning, especially in winter, so it's got all day to dry before the nighttime coolness sets in.
That's such a great point because, yeah, when we're winter vegging, we really do have to watch out for moisture, which attracts fungus. And that goes back to what you're saying about keeping enough airflow around those tomato plants. This is the same issue. We need to make sure that there's enough dry period so that the fungus doesn't set into our plants, especially in winter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So are there any ways to extend our growing season in winter? So, you know, often we'll think about extending the spring or summer growing seasons with like hot houses and stuff like that. Do we, like, is it possible to extend the winter growing season?
Because I love spring and summer so much in the garden, I don't extend the season once the beds are kind of empty, you know, a green manure crop grows in to replenish the soil and start all over again for spring and summer and add new compost. But you can plant later on in the season, so later towards the end of winter when we're kind of coming to the warmer temperatures, you can plant another crop of maybe broccolini or something like that that's going to grow fast. But, yeah, it's something I personally don't do to extend, but you can they call it succession planting, which means you're going to prolong the season of winter. If you just keep rotating and planting, and you will extend your season up to obviously where we said before that once it gets hotter, your broccoli and that will grow to seed, even your cabbage. I've never seen last season, it was a bit weird. I've never seen a cabbage go to flower, but once you leave it for a bit too long, the insides will become a flower and they'll pop out. It's really unusual, but it's something worth seeing. So if you want to try it, give it a go.
They are pretty cool, aren't they? Have you ever seen the Brassica oleracea? Or I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's the original ancestor of like the cabbage, the broccoli, kale, just basically all the brassicas that we love. Have you ever seen the original weedy plant?
It's got little yellow flowers. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this really thin stalk. Like it's so crazy how it evolved it was bred into a broccoli and a cauliflower. But you can still see it in the flowers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is true because all the flowers look the same when you compare a cabbage flower to like a broccoli flower. They're nearly identical. So yeah, that's where it comes from, the same mother plant, I guess.
Same mother plant. So that family has four petals, usually white, purple, or yellow flowers, two short stamens and four tall stamens, but I should probably check that before I release this. But fascinating plants, and it's just so crazy how we bred them to have this like short, fat, stocky stem when originally it was this really spindly-looking thing.
Yeah, and I guess all veggies, you could go back to where they came from. And see, you know, where what you're eating has actually stemmed from. Like you just said, the broccoli has gone from a weedy looking thing to something that's delicious and we put on our plate every single night.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've talked about extending the winter season. Some people might like to do that. Maybe some people would prefer to get straight into spring. So how do we prepare our veggie beds for spring? Like, we've just harvested our broccoli. Can we get things going ready for the next season, or should we wait? What should we do there? Or does it depend?
So a lot of people say to, instead of pulling your whole broccoli or cauliflower and stuff out, cut just above the soil and let the roots rot, and which will give nutrients and stuff, and worms will actually feed on it as well. So that's one idea. Also, it's kind of the same as prepping for what you would do for winter. So adding manure and compost. Don't plant in the same bed as you did last season. So if you've had tomatoes in a bed, don't plant again because of the pests and diseases. You don't want to try and, you know, have the same disease. So for myself, I won't be planting tomatoes in my three raised garden beds again. I'll have to plant them somewhere else just to give it a break. They do say to, I think it's 3 years that you shouldn't plant in the same bed. I think it's that.
That seems quite extreme, especially if you haven't had any diseases or anything.
Yeah, but I guess it just takes that little, a little bit of disease that you haven't noticed to wipe out your crop. So very similar to what we said about how to prepare the garden bed for winter is, also add in the Charlie Cart pellets. I do that every season or every time I'm planting something new into the garden, because by then the slow-release pellets probably aren't working anymore. There's probably no nutrients. You know,
they've been slowly released.
Yeah, the broccoli and cauliflower have soaked up all the nutrients and stuff, and it's ready to prep the bed again. So when I will be just adding some manure, compost, probably some more garden loam as well, just to top the beds up, and mulching. But yeah, that would probably be, if you have time, you can do a green manure crop. But they sometimes take between like 6 and 12 weeks to fully get, you know, growing, cut back and dig into the soil. So if you've got plenty of time, or maybe you're not planting a winter veggie garden and you're just waiting for spring, that would be a good thing for you to do to add the nitrogen and all the minerals and stuff back into the soil.
Yeah, and when you say, oh, we're not planting the same plant in the bed next time, this also goes for relatives, right? So I wouldn't plant cauliflower in the same bed I had broccoli. I'd plant something completely different from a different family.
That's correct, yeah. So there are things you can find on Google that kind of help you, you know, what you should plant after what. If it confuses you, don't feel like you need to do that, because it confuses me and I try my very best to not plant in the same thing. But it's all a learning curve. As we were going back before, gardening is a learning curve, and you learn what you need to learn slowly. It's not overnight you wake up and you're the best gardener ever and you know everything and, you know, you shouldn't do this but you shouldn't do that. You just learn from your mistakes, learn little bits at a time. If you don't have anywhere else to plant your tomato in where you planted your tomato last year. It's not going to be the end of the world.
No. The worst case is you lose your tomatoes. Big
one. Yeah. Yeah.
You go and buy some for $5 a kilo.
Won't taste the same, but yeah, you can do that.
You're not gonna starve in this country.
No. No, but, yeah, just as I said before, if you can't change where you've planted, it's not going to be the end of the world. Just do what you can go for it.
I really love that you keep emphasizing that. That is so true. It's not about being an expert, and it's not about being afraid of mistakes. It's about embracing the whole thing, and gardeners can laugh at ourselves when we make a mistake.
Yeah, yeah, that is so true. And I think I say this all the time, don't compare your garden to other people's gardens, because everyone, and as you said before, people say, oh, I'm fully organic, I don't use anything, but behind that camera they could be using anything that you don't know of.
I know, it's a show business, baby. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, so I just think garden the way you want to garden. Don't compare to others. Obviously, there's gardens that you can strive for and you go, oh, I wish my garden looked like that. But make your garden the way you want to make it. Sometimes my garden looks like an absolute mess. But I think that's all gardeners. We start one thing and then our brain goes to another, and then we start another thing, and then we come back and finish what we were actually meant to be doing. So I just think, yeah, prep the soil and whatever, add whatever you want in it into it. Some people have a homemade compost. I'm trying to get my head around composting myself. So obviously I'm not adding any homemade compost into my garden at the moment because it's not something I'm 100% on. But buying compost and manure from a nursery isn't the end of the world. Sometimes they're just as good as homemade compost. So as long as your garden is thriving and it's growing the way you want to grow it, add whatever you think you need to add into the soil to prep it for the new season.
Well said. What a wonderful note to end it on. So, Mariah, at the end of every episode, I always like to ask guests one final question. It doesn't have to be on topic. It can be about anything in the world. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
Oh, gosh, this is a hard one.
Isn't this? It's so funny. This is always the hard question.
But does it? Do people always refer back to gardening? Because I think
no, it can be about anything. Really? No, this is your time. So anything you'd like to talk about is totally fine. You can advocate for a change in the world. Tell us about the cool new skateboard trick you learned on the weekend.
Oh, gosh. It's always going to come back to gardening, I think, because gardening is my number one hobby, and gardening pulled me out of a dark place.
What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I kind of still do struggle today with depression and anxiety. And I kind of think that's where my love of gardening came from. I gardened with my mum when I was a child. My pop was a gardener. My nan had a green thumb. She used to grow lovely roses, but I reckon the roses probably never had any fertilizer in their life. and they got the hardest cutbacks of their life. But she grew beautiful, beautiful, beautiful roses. And when I was diagnosed or told that I had depression and anxiety, I kind of fell into gardening. And they do say touching the soil does something to our brain chemicals. And I think it's just something that you can go to the plants, you pour your love into the plants give you something back. You know, put your AirPods in, put your earphones in, spend half an hour in the garden, and it just boosts your mood. And I do that now. I work from home and stuff, and if I just need a 5-minute break, I head out to the garden. And just, you don't have to do anything. It's just admiring what you've achieved in such a short period of time, or even looking at photos of where the garden was a year ago to where it is now, and you think, God, I am doing something right, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think and a lot of people do say the garden helps them with depression and anxiety, and I think if you do have, you know, mental health problems, you know, or you're thinking of, oh, I do need some help, go get help. And gardening might be what, you know, maybe talking to someone about your problems isn't really what you want to do, but maybe sitting at the back and having a little garden might bring so much happiness and joy into your life. And it's not going to cure you, you know, it's not going to fix your mental health. We're always going to have struggles, but, you know, gardening has helped me a long way, and I'm a big person to, I was shy to say, not shy, but I guess I held back in telling people that I had depression and anxiety, but one day I did like a mental health awareness post on Instagram, and the amount of people that were like, yeah, gardening helped me as well. It's just a place, my place, a place of happiness and a place that brings joy. So yeah, I just think, yeah, gardening and mental health go hand in hand. It's not for everyone, obviously. I'm not forcing you to go and start a garden and stuff like that. But I think if you give it a go, you never know how it's going to make you feel. Some days the garden will make you angry because it's not working out. But, but yeah, it's a place of happiness and joy. And I guess your backyard garden is like a cuddle. I guess when you're feeling
that's
down.
That's so true. I love that. The backyard garden is like a cuddle. That's so true.
But, yeah, that's what I would say. It's probably I could have said 100 other things for that question. But, yeah, I'm just a big advocate of mental health and gardening and where it's pulled me from on my dark days. So, yeah.
I love that. I don't think you're the only gardener who can say that. I mean, for me, it was the same thing. I was in a very stressful sales job. Just that's where my career had led me. And I wasn't happy with it. So I was just like, look, I just need a job where I can just go and work with my hands and not think, like just listen to the birds and stuff. And, yeah, maintenance gardening happened to be it. It wasn't vegetable gardening in my own garden, but it was my own gardening path. And, yeah, 100% agree. It's good for you. It's just good for you. Gardening is just good for you. And my own home garden has evolved into my main joy. Yes, I love eating the veggies, but I love building the habitat for the insects, and I love finding new insects and stuff. And that's a big part of it for me too, is identifying little insects and crawling around on my hands and knees looking at stuff and digging my finger into the soil and seeing when there's an imbalance in one way or another, and then seeing how the garden adapts to that.
Yeah, and I think it's a space of creativity. It's you could think of your backyard as a blank canvas. I know when I moved in with my partner, it's going to sound very bad, but it was a very manly backyard. There was a couple of trees, not many plants or anything. So I kind of came into a blank canvas and created it very homely, and now it's our garden. And you know, every day you're thinking, what can I do different? You know, and I think it gives your brain somewhere to go when you are feeling down or anything like that. You know, I lost my job and I was, you know, jobless for a few months, and you know, every day there was something I could do in the backyard instead of sitting inside and, you know, pondering the world and thinking how terrible life is. You got to think there's other people out there that are worse off. And I kind of turn my, you know, mentality to I've got a backyard, I'm happy, I'm free, I can do what I like, you know, and that's kind of where you go. But anyways, I'm just talking now, so I'll stop.
No, it's a podcast. That's so true. So true, though. So well said. Mariah, thank you so much for your time today. That was a great chat. I hope it helped some people learn about winter veggies, and hopefully some people, I mean, it's not too late if we get in now, is it?
No, I would say don't do seeds. It's very late for seeds. But, you know, head to your local nursery, grab yourself a broccoli, a cauliflower, cabbage or something like that, and try something new. And don't forget to preserve your homegrown food, because you don't want it to go to waste.
So well said. Great chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
They say that a landscaper's garden is like a mechanic's car, meaning that we spend so much effort on perfecting other people's gardens that we often neglect our own. If that sounds like you, maybe it's time to reignite your passion for this art and science that we call horticulture by getting that backyard veggie patch in order. It's not too late to start growing winter veg. Head down to your local nursery and pick up a few seedlings, and make sure you choose a good fertiliser that will support the soil biota as well as your plant. And pick one that's produced in Australia that benefits our ecology, like Charlie Carp. If you'd like to learn more about Charlie Carp and growing veggies, check out episode 122, Turning Pest Fish into Fertiliser with Ron Caponica, and episode 139, Growing Abundant Leafy Greens with Michael Homan. Get your Charlie Carp at Bunnings Warehouse, Mitre 10, or your local nursery.